The question was asked, if a person's in a coma, how does that person compare spiritually with someone who's performing mitzvot? So I think we have to discern between a few different circumstances. You have a person that's born with limitations. You have a person that's born, let's say, with a lower IQ or with certain handicaps. So that's a situation where that person was given a different potential than other people. So there we would apply what the Mabit says in the beginning of his Beit Elohim. He says, God doesn't gauge us compared to someone else. God gauges each person compared to their own potential. And so accomplishments are not measured in an absolute fashion. And this is what Rav Bigun kept hammering into me when I first came to the Machon, that we don't have tests in the Machon because you cannot test accomplishment. This isn't like an academic field where Judaism is, how much halacha do you know? You have one guy who walks into the Machon and he's just learning how to keep Shabbos, and he's keeping Shabbos, and that's such an accomplishment for him. So now he's going to be tested on his knowledge of the laws of davening Shacharis in the morning. That's not his area of challenge. You know, he's accomplishing a tremendous amount in another area, and it's not fair to gauge him based on a set standard. Every person's growth is different, and every person's potential is different, and so you can't have standardized tests for life. You can have standardized tests about limited information. And God expects of us to live up to our own potential. As we find in Chazal, every one of us has a representation in heaven, which represents our potential, what we could be. And we are going to be compared to that. None of us are going to be compared to someone else's angel. But we're all going to be compared to our own angel, our own representation. So that's the first scenario, where a person is born with limitations. They are gauged based on their accomplishments within the realm of their capacity. They do not have to live up to what other people can. So that's number one. And I can give you many interesting stories, but I think the concept is understood without the stories. So let's move on to point number two. Yes, we're all on the same page. That's clear. Okay. Point number two. You have people who are born and they have extraordinarily limited capacity. Like there's a famous story of the person who was born mentally handicapped, and he really could never develop beyond the age of a 3-year-old. Now he cannot perform mitzvot. He doesn't understand anything. So he's born into a religious family, and he might go through the motions, but he doesn't really understand what he's doing. It's not so clear that there's any value in the mitzvot he's doing. He knows that we don't turn on a light on Shabbos. Very good. But he has no concept of a God and a Shabbos. He has a concept of behaving like other people behave. So there's a famous story about the Chafetz Chaim. That the Chafetz Chaim came into the room once and found people joking at the expense of someone who was mentally handicapped. And the Chafetz Chaim looked at them, and even though the Chafetz Chaim was usually very friendly and warm, he yelled at them, gave them over the head. And he said to them a very famous line. He said, "That person has the soul of a tzaddik. That person was almost perfect in their previous life. And they had only something minuscule to fix in this world. And that's why God took the soul of this pious person and put it into a body that would have limited intelligence so that he could do no wrong. There's no such concept as a sin by this person because he doesn't understand. So he's done nothing wrong his whole life. This is a soul that had something very minor to accomplish in this world. So that's why God put it in that limited capacity." And they say that the Chafetz Chaim used to stand up when someone who is mentally handicapped walked into the room, based on this concept. They say that when such a person would walk into the room, the Chafetz Chaim would stand up because he'd say, "A holy soul just walked into the room. How could I stay seated? So that's concept number two. Okay, so we began with one. Each person has their potential, and we're not gauged in a comparative or in a standardized mode. Each one's gauged based on their own capacity and accomplishment. Then we went on to point number two, which is that sometimes, specifically a person who seems to have much, much, much less capacity, is a holier person. And that's in a point of comfort to people who have, God forbid, children with all kinds of illnesses that pass away. So this is a very important concept because it helps people deal with the loss. So if you think about it as a soul that only had to come here to finish one or two more things, and they didn't want to, there was no need to live on further. Okay, so that's point number two. Before we go on, yes?
I was going to ask, because they can't actually accomplish anything, because they have no really like free will, intelligent free will, so how could they fix anything in the past, unless it's just like a punishment or something like that?
So, I don't understand any of this, in all honesty. But I think that one of the ideas would be, let's say, someone owned the store. And they weren't diligent enough in ensuring that they were honest with their scales. They were a pious person, everything was great. But they had these 2 or 3 months where things got lax, and the scales were off, and they ended up making money off of people that they shouldn't have. So it can be that they're sent back so that they will find it, within their lifetime they will pay back this one and that one and the other one. Here he helps this guy carry his bags home. Here he watches this guy's kid for him at the park. He'll do a bunch of things that over a lifetime will be a repayment of the money he owes. For example, again, I don't understand any of this, but it seems that there is such a concept of a justice system where certain things have to be repaid, have to be taken care of. Okay, so that seems to be the line of reasoning. Again, I don't know how to explain it that much better because I don't think I understand it that much better. So that's point number two. Now we run into scenario number three, which is really the scenario you described. Person led a fruitful life, person led a productive life, and suddenly person grows ill, goes into a coma. God forbid a person's in an accident, they're in a coma. So basically, their life has been put on hold. They're no longer functional if a person's in a coma. So some people, I guess, have thought processes during a coma, and some people don't, or at least they don't remember it when they come out of it. So if a person, his mind is working while he's in a coma, so there are mitzvahs of the mind. I'm saying technically a person can perform that during that time. But if the way we understand a person in a coma is really not thinking, it's more like a dreamlike state, so then God has really put his life on hold. Is he accomplishing anything during that time? Doesn't seem that way. It seems like, for whatever reason in heaven, they've given the person this task to live out these years in this state, or this period in this state. It could be that by doing so, they will end up coming to heaven cleaner. They will have paid off whatever debt they owed for things they did wrong in whatever way, or for another reason they had to go through that. But that's a slightly different concept than the first two. Here you have a person that led a productive life. They did whatever they should have or could have done. And then at some point, God limited their capacity to perform. So to a certain degree, it seems like God put a pause on their life. Instead of hitting the end button or the stop button, God put a pause button, which will eventually be a stop button. But I don't think that's comparable to the first two scenarios. Because here the person had his chance. Instead of his dying in one day, God basically put him on pause for a period until they die. Is there a merit to every day they're left living? There can be. We definitely don't stop life. We keep hoping the person will come back. We definitely see a value in every day they're living. But are they performing mitzvot when they're not there at all? It's hard to say that they are. It could be if someone puts on them talis and tefillin and all that. So they're performing mitzvot in that sense. You know, the person's body is performing mitzvot. Until a person's dead, he does have mitzvot. Let's take an example. If a person tells his son, I would like you to give a shekel of my money every day for charity. You can come to my wallet and give a shekel every day. So long as he's alive, that's his money. And so long as he's alive, every day his son is doing what he asked him to do, that's his mitzvah. The second he dies, that's no longer his money. So that becomes his son's mitzvah. He might have a hand in it, but it's not the same. It's not his mitzvah. We say, lametim chofshi, from the minute a person's dead, he no longer has mitzvos. That's it. He can have merits through different things that he set into motion before he died. But it's very different. Right now it's his mitzvah. So in that sense, a person in a coma is still alive, and things that he set rolling can still be his mitzvot. You with me? He still has monetary ownership, and as such, if he appointed someone to do something, it's still his action. So in that sense, the person in a coma is still alive. But that's a very limited sense. Yeah.